part of the strike zone for strike number one. It's an 0-1 count. Adrian, 1-for-2 in the game officially, but he's reached base four times. That pitch is low for ball number one. He's drawn three walks. Adrian had reached base just one time in 12 plate appearances entering today. But now that on-base percentage is skyrocketing as that pitch misses inside. It's 2-1. Not just that, he picked up his first hit as a Rafter. This one is a diving play over at first base and somehow snow-coned by the first baseman, Nate Gray. That is a highlight play right there, but it's not going to get any justice because the Rafters put up five runs in the frame and they lead 16-7. Five runs on three hits, no errors, nobody left. And it is 16-7 as we hit the bottom of the ninth. Rafters going to turn to Espen Simpson for three more outs when we come back here on WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Now, back to more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
We're feeling good here as we enter the ninth inning. The Rafters up nine runs in the bottom of the ninth. Yeah, that matches. That matches. It's been a good roll here as the Rafters put up a five spot in the top of the ninth inning. That ties their season high from when they scored five runs in the first inning of the game against Wausau on Wednesday. And, well, they're feeling pretty good as they once had this one a close game. Espen Simpson also dealing, and the first pitch is called strike number one against Jack Cleveneau. The Rafters a 16-7 lead. This pitch outside for ball number one. It's 1-1. Here on the road, the Rafters felt like they deserved to win game number one of this two-game series against the Chinooks, but lost last night's game on a walk-off two-run home run from Brody Rasmussen. As now a 1-2 count to Cleveneau. And so they came back with a vengeance today. Especially Espen Simpson. 1-2 count is in there. Called strike number three. Got him looking. That's out number one. Chinooks down to their last two outs of the game. Rafters have put up 15 hits in the game tonight. Scored 16 runs on them. And including those hits, the Rafters had a home run from Luke Skinner. They had a home run from Jack Guerrero. And they've had a slew of hits from the entire lineup. Esteban Garcia swings and misses at the first pitch to make it an 0-1 count. Looking at the lineup, all but two batters have picked up a hit. And one of those two is a pinch runner, Brent Gallegos, who really hasn't had much of a chance. He's had just one plate appearance, and he took a walk. This pitch outside for ball number one, a 1-1 count to Garcia. Ashton Zacher had 3 hits. Mason Onati had 4 hits. A pair of them for Jack Guerrero as this pitch misses inside for ball number 2. A 2-1 count to Garcia. Simpson trying to go 3 complete innings here is he threw just 25 pitches in the first 2. Already retired a batter on 4 pitches here in the 9th, and this will be his 4th pitch of this plate appearance, and it's a breaking ball that drops right on in there for strike number 2. 2-2 the count. Nasty curveball from Espen Simpson. Eight batters have recorded a hit in this game for the Rafters. That pitch away for ball number 3. Actually, no, 9 hitters have recorded a hit for the Rafters. I just can't count. You know what? It's getting late. It's past 10 o'clock here, so I'll give myself a pass on that. 3-2 count. Left-handed batter Garcia at the plate. He plays second base, and he watches this pitch miss high and outside for ball number 4. That's the first walk issued from Espen Simpson, and that was his struggle the last time that Simpson saw the mound. In that game, which was just 2 days ago on the 31st, he went 1 inning, but, well, actually his last time up he was a lot better about issuing the walks, but he had issued 2 hits. 3 hits and no walks. It was the previous time where he issued 3 walks and recorded just 1 out. Swing and a miss here makes it an 0-1 count to David Hogg. But his last time up, Simpson seemingly overcorrected and left it over the plate too much. He allowed 3 hits. Struck out 2 batters, though. The 0-1 is a little outside for ball 1, and it brings it back even at a 1-1 count. And Rafters fans got a reason to be happy. This one, late in the game, relatively stress-free. 1-1 count, misses inside, and it's 2-1. And it feels good to have a big win like this. It's the last time that the Rafters had a large lead late in the game. It was that game against Wausau. It ended up becoming a 2-run game. And, well, the game-tying batter was actually on first base in that one. The go-ahead run was at the plate. I mean, it was scary for a bit. 2-2 count for David Hogg at the plate. But you know what? This one, you got to have a couple of them. A very good win. 2-2. This will be the 3rd win of the season for the Rafters. It's their largest margin of victory by a mile as that one misses low for ball number 3. Previously, the biggest win of the season was that 2-run win over Wausau. And their only other win was the walk-off victory from Noah Ruiz. 3-2 is fouled down the third baseline, so we'll do it again. Runner on first base with 1 away, and the Rafters trying to finish this one on the road. They've been feeling a little up and down about their season. They felt like they've been in these games but haven't been able to finish them. They've had a couple where they've lost big, but this time they get a big win. 3-2 misses low and away, and David Hogg takes his base. Second walk of the inning for Espen Simpson, and you start to worry about that. There was a man warming up earlier, and I think this might be it for Espen Simpson, even though the lead is 9 runs. And Esteban Garcia drew a walk. David Hogg drew a walk, so you had runners on first and second. The man who's about to step up to the plate is Brody Rasmussen. And even if he hit a home run here, I mean, it's still a 6-run game, so you really don't feel much pressure, even despite the runners on first and second. So Rasmussen will now step up to the plate. Chance to keep the inning going. There is only 1 out here in the bottom of the 9th, but the Rafters up 16-7 as Ziggy is done talking with Espen Simpson, and we're ready to go. You know, the first time that I met Espen was a pretty memorable one for an interesting reason, as this one's a chopper over to third. This could do it. 5-4, back to first, and not in time. So only one out there, but David Hogg is retired. Fielder's choice. And it brings up Drew Reynolds down to their last out here as Esteban Garcia moved over to third base. Final out here for Simpson. It's a curveball that misses high for ball number one. And story about the first time that I met him, well, we were doing a media shoot. It was on media day. 1-0 count. This one is sent over towards third base, and this should do it. And five back to three, but it gets away from first base. Guerrero not able to make the pick. And that's a low throw from Luke Skinner. So an error there as the throw comes back in, and it's a lofted one, so it allows the runner to come round and score. So heads-up base running from Brody Rasmussen, who goes all the way from first to home on an error on the throw from Luke Skinner. So two runs come home to score there. It's 16-9 now in the ninth inning. The Raptors still feeling pretty good as here's a swing and a miss from Nate Gray to make it an 0-1 count. Felt like you should be out of the inning right now, but Simpson's still working up there. 0-1. The Raptors head home tomorrow for a five-game homestand. We'll be back at Witter Field and bringing baseball your way from Wisconsin Rapids. 1-1 count now as that misses low. So the boys are going to be getting in late tonight. Now, they want to get back on that bus, headed back home. Get ready for tomorrow's game, as here's a swing and a miss on the 1-1 to make it a 1-2 count. Because the Raptors tomorrow are going to be facing the Fond du Lac Dock Spiders. Fond du Lac, their game finished up. The final score 10-1 against Wausau. They took the loss. This one is fouled away by Gray. Taking a look at some of the other important games. Madison won 10-3 over Royal Oak. That's a final score as well. This, the final game of the night in the Northwoods League. 1-2 count. And it's a swing and a miss. And that does it for the game. Strike number three, Espen Simpson goes three innings. Although he does allow those runs at the end there. They weren't earned. So not a bad performance whatsoever. A great pitching display from Espen Simpson. He goes three innings there and ends it with two runs allowed on no hits. There was an error, and there was also one runner left on base. So the final score, 16-9, as we will head on and talk about the post-game show pretty quickly in a second, as you're listening to WFHR Wisconsin Rapids.
Sports allow us to play, learn, and grow. But there's something more important than victory. At the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, we believe every athlete deserves to be safe. Safe from abuse and misconduct on and off the field. We equip athletes, parents, coaches, and others with the right education to recognize, prevent, and respond to harmful behavior. Join the movement to champion respect and end abuse at uscenterforsafesport.org.
Mornings on WFHR.
Nutella just announced its first new U.S. flavor in 61 years.
The new flavor is peanut.
I can just see the boardroom, right, when they were doing this thing.
Oh, gentlemen, we have cornered the market on hazelnut and chocolate. We need something new.
Sir, how about we do peanuts?
Are you telling me you want to do something like peanut butter? That sounds revolutionary.
Brilliant!
Weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
There's danger out there. It lurks on highways and quiet neighborhood streets. It's more likely to kill you than a shark and more terrifying than the biggest snake. Distracted driving claims lives every day. Every notification, swipe, social post, video, or selfie while driving risks your life. So while you might think public speaking or the zombie apocalypse is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Let's get back to the rafters here on WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Post-game show coming your way from Maquon, Wisconsin, and it's a happy post-game show as the rafters took the win 16-9 over the Lakeshore Chinooks. It's their third win of the season. They move to 3-5 on the year. Lakeshore drops to 1-7 on the season. Coming up next, the Rafters going to be going home to take on Fond du Lac in a two-game series before they face Royal Oak in a back-to-back. And then they have one game against Green Bay before they hit the road yet again. So five straight games at Witter Field. Excited for that. The boys have a bus drive back. But before that, let's go ahead and take a look at the way that it happened. In the first inning, the Rafters added one run. They took the lead 1-0 thanks to an RBI sack fly from Jack Guerrero. But in the bottom of the first, it was not the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters game as the Chinooks added four runs. Firstly, it was on a wild pitch, then on a RBI, well, would have been RBI if it weren't for the double play on Nate Gray, so two outs, and then a walk, and a two RBI double from Dylan Sales made it four runs in that first inning. Second inning comes around, the Rafters don't score, but the Chinooks do. They add one more run on an RBI ground out from Drew Reynolds. Third inning, though, the Rafters start their slow comeback. Top of the third comes, and it's a run scored on Ashton Zacher's RBI single, a big pickup there, and Zacher had a big game for the Rafters tonight, so we'll get to the total stats afterwards, but it was a RBI single to make it a 2-5 game. Then, in the fourth inning, after a scoreless third from the Rafters pitching staff, fourth inning comes around, and the Rafters add two more runs thanks to a wild pitch where J.J. Garcia went from second all the way home, and then also an RBI sack fly from Mason Onati that sent home Nick Adrian. Nick Adrian also had a good game today. He was one of a few Rafters that had some strong games. Well, the bottom of the fourth game comes around, and another shutout frame. Jack Obraski coming in. He went scoreless in the third and fourth inning. Fifth inning, though, Rafters back up to the plate. They score one run in the top of the fifth thanks to a bases-loaded walk from Nick Adrian. So that makes it a tie ball game at 5-5. However, bottom of the fifth comes around as Ashton Poole takes over and one run comes across for the Chinooks. They score the run on a sacrifice fly from Jack Cleveno. Then in the sixth inning, Rafters add another run. They take the lead back, they tie the game back 6-6. But in the bottom of the sixth, once again, Lakeshore takes the lead. It's 7-6 after an RBI sack fly from Dylan Sales. Seventh inning, though, the Rafters add two runs, both on an RBI single from a pinch hit RBI single from Noah Ruiz, which tied the game, and then an RBI single from Royce Clayton Jr. Bottom of the seventh, it's shut down as Espen Simpson comes in and he closes it down, and I believe he's going to be credited with the save, as at that point in time, it was a save situation, so a big save for Espen Simpson. That's the first save of the season for the Rafters. He went three innings in the save, starting in the seventh inning. It's perfect seventh inning. Top of the eighth comes around. The Rafters add three runs there, thanks to a two-run shot from Jack Guerrero, followed up by an RBI sack fly from Luke Skinner. And that put the Rafters up 11-7. They were feeling pretty good. And then bottom of the eighth comes around, another shutdown inning from Simpson. And top of the ninth, the Rafters add five more on Jacob Jacome. He allowed eight runs in the game, a rough game for him. And the Rafters added those five runs on an RBI triple from Chris Diaz, also a two-run shot from Luke Skinner. And prior to that, it was a wild pitch that sent home Brent Gallegos, along with Jack Guerrero picking up an RBI ground out as well. So a big game overall, taking a look back at the stats. The Rafters saw a 4-for-4 game from Mason Onati. He scored four runs as well. Royce Clayton Jr., he struggled a little bit, but still picked up an RBI. Ashton Zacher goes 3-for-3 with two walks and two RBIs. Brent Gallegos, pinch running for him, scored two runs and also drew a walk. Jack Guerrero goes 2-for-4 with a home run and four RBIs and two runs scored. Along with that, it was a very good game from the bottom of the order as they all got on base quite a lot. Nick Adrian reached base four times. He had a 1-for-3 night with three walks. Chris Diaz a 1-for-3 night with two walks and a hit-by-pitch. So all around, awesome performance. Pitching staff-wise, looking at those numbers, Jack Obrasky goes two scoreless innings with three strikeouts. Cannon Restine, he goes two-thirds of an inning without allowing an earned run. And Espen Simpson, he allowed two unearned runs in his three innings of work. Well, that's about it. The Rafters end up winning this game 16-9, and we truly do appreciate all of the support of Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball here on WFHR. And wherever you tune in or coming into the field, it's always greatly appreciated. A big win here. Hopefully they can keep it up when they come back home, and I hope to see you at the ballpark as well. But that's going to do it for our postgame show and from tonight's coverage from Lakeshore. As in Maquon, Wisconsin, it's been a great experience here, and a big thank you to all of the Lakeshore staff for their hospitality and for helping us have a happy experience here, and hopefully another great one as we'll return here in just about a week's time. But that's going to do it for our broadcast here on WFHR. So for myself, Austin Thomas, and from the rest of the entire organization of the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, thank you. Have a great rest of your night.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hans Breitenmoser. We have people in Congress right now cutting food assistance.
All of it is a disregard for how the economy actually works. When you plant seeds in the ground, you get money close to the ground. That's what makes rural economies work. Urban economies are very similar in that regard. Washington is only as good as its participants, and we've got some real dandies there these days.
That's definitely one way to put it.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Lily Roberts, she is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund.
They're trying to pretend that this bill would be good for the working class because of this really small carve out to our tax laws. The no tax on tips.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and the Calvinator on the board coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up a little bit later on today, Todd Alba from 2 to 4 across the network, 2:35. Todd's going to speak with State Senator Kelda Royce. She is on the Joint Finance Committee. She'll have an update on the Wisconsin state budget. At 3 o'clock, Todd is joined by Wisconsin Watch reporter Tom Kircher. So join Todd today from 2 to 4 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up after the 9:30 news, economics professor Rick Reed will be here. If you have a question for the professor, please send it in. You can email it at janesays@civicmedia.us. You can text it in at 855-752-4842, or you can leave a voice note.
Yes.
If you have the Civic Media app, there's a place now you can record a voice note. So Professor Reed coming up after the 9:30 news. This happened over the weekend. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst was at a town hall recently.
Yeah.
And she was talking about Medicaid.
Yes.
And someone in the audience yelled out, if you make these cuts, people are going to die.
Yep.
Essentially. Mm-hmm. And Calvin, I believe we have a clip from Senator Ernst. What was her response during this town hall meeting, please?
One point, they are not eligible. So they will be coming off. So people are not... Well, we all are going to die. So, for heaven's sakes, folks. Okay, no.
For heaven's sakes, folks, we're all going to die.
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, she is not wrong.
No, she's not wrong.
But, I mean, dude,
my dude.
Well, and then she came back because there was a lot of blowback from this.
Yeah.
Then Senator Ernst came back with a response that she filmed in a cemetery.
Oh, it was great. I mean, whomever works for her, chef's kiss.
It was so smart. Calvin, I believe we have a little sample from that response. Can we play that, please?
Hello, everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to sincerely apologize for a statement that I made yesterday. Hello, everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to sincerely apologize for a statement that I made yesterday at my town hall. I was in the process of answering a question that had been asked by an audience member when a woman who was extremely distraught screamed out from the back corner of the auditorium, "People are going to die." And I made an incorrect assumption that everyone in the auditorium understood that, yes, we are all going to perish from this earth.
Pretty much.
But?
So I apologize.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad that I did not have to bring up the subject of the Tooth Fairy as well.
Real sincere, real sincere response there from Senator Joni Ernst.
Then she ends it with "Get with Jesus."
Right.
Yep.
Go with God.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I mean, again, this is playing really well in some circles. Oh, she, lib tears. We love it. We love the lib tears. Joni Ernst, way to come back to it. I don't know that this is going to work so well for her in the long run.
I don't think so either. There's already a person who's running against her in Iowa for this seat, a Democrat, and they're running ads already.
We're using this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just dumb. Dumb stuff.
Jim from Brookfield is on the line. Good morning, Jim. Thank you for waiting. What did you want to say?
Good morning, Jane. Good morning, Greg and Calvinator. I just want to say, circling back to our beloved Senator Ron Johnson's never-ending fight for tax cuts for the wealthy, he has occasionally, as a lot of right-wing politicians, when they're finally called on it, you know, why do we have to keep giving tax breaks to the wealthy at the expense of the poor? You know, their classic line is, well, no poor man ever built a factory.
Right.
Okay, well, I would like to ask Mr. Johnson, first of all, how many factories has he built? And second of all, how many billions do you need to build a factory? And why, when you build these, the few that do, why can't you afford a living wage with health insurance? So let's make a list of all the factories Mr. Ron Johnson and the U-Lines and everybody else has created that have paid, you know, living wages with health care. And how many billions they still have after any of those expenditures.
Boy, if we could actually get him to sit down and answer a question, Jim, that'd be a great idea.
Yeah.
I have all kinds of things I would love to ask Senator Johnson. But you make a really good point. And the one thing that I used to say, too, you know what? If you have a good enough job where you can afford a cleaning lady, you're a job creator, aren't you?
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate you calling.
As I said before, I'm not poor, but I'm also not rich, wealthy, but I'm a job creator.
If you hire a lawn service, aren't you a job creator?
But I love that he said this because once again, within the statement is a conversation, which is, yeah, poor people probably aren't job creators because poor people don't have access to the funds that you do. They don't have access to opportunity like you do. Maybe if we made it easier and the education out there, maybe there is a person who qualifies as poor. Is like, I want to open up my own food truck. I want to open up my own
juice stand, whatever,
hat store,
right?
Whatever. We make those opportunities possible so they can grab those bootstraps, pull them up, and become a job creator, and, you know, make a good living here in America. So when you say there poor people don't make jobs, okay, great. How do we change that?
We have news coming up next, and then when we return, economics professor Rick Reed will be here. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away.
Cause we're all gonna die, we just don't know.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Federal hate crime charges are filed against an Egyptian man in Boulder, Colorado, who is here illegally.
Throw Molotov cocktails at a group of men and women, some of them in their late 80s, burning them as they peacefully walked on a Sunday.
Acting U.S. Attorney Bishop Gruhl says 12 people who gathered to show support for Israeli hostages were injured. CBS's Elizabeth Palmer says of peace talks between Russia and Ukraine in Istanbul that came after sophisticated drone attacks by Ukraine on Russia.
No substantive negotiations took place today on the real heart of the matter. That is how to stop the fighting and establish a truce that would then lead to an end to the war.
With haze spreading through the U.S. from Canadian wildfires, meteorologist Craig Allen says some relief could be on the way.
Some of these fires are only 10 to 20% contained. However, there is some rainfall in the forecast across the central provinces of Canada.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Christian Yelich injured. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Badgers play the Reds tonight in Cincinnati, but slugger Christian Yelich will be out after he was hit with a pitch in the Brewers' 5-2 win over the Phillies yesterday on FanDuel Wisconsin.
Ooh, that get him in the hand. Home plate umpires awarding him first base, and it's a hit by pitch. And
that one a little bit too far in on Yelich.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy.
He's real sore. You know, he couldn't squeeze the bat, so it'll be a day-to-day thing. It's not broken, thank God. I hate it for him that he's got to take a day off, but probably will be out.
X-rays did not show any broken bones. College football, the Badgers with over a dozen prospects on campus over the weekend. Three of the players agreeing to commit, including a 6'3" linebacker, Ben Wenzel, out of Appleton North High School.
Bigger is not always what wins. It's physicality as well. The bigger you are, the more you can hold up. But we still got to continue to train and understand what physicality really looks like.
That's Badgers head coach Luke Fickle. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Clint Eastwood is tired of sequels, franchises, and remakes. Join the club, bruh. The four-time Oscar winner is a spry 95 years old and says he misses the days when writers would hole up in a bungalow on a studio lot and churn out movies like Casablanca. The 95-year-old star of In the Line of Fire and the director of Juror No. 2 says he plans on working for a long time. Eastwood says he'll work as long as he can still learn something or until he is truly senile. 95, a sense of humor, still making movies, and he can probably take you. Here's one of Pete's picks. If you like good old-fashioned manhunts, check out American Manhunt, The Search for Osama Bin Laden. At first, I had no desire to relive 9/11, but watching it with my kids was an experience. The American Manhunt series, not to be confused with Manhunt, The Search for America's Most Gorgeous Male Model, includes two other mini-docs, The Search for O.J. Simpson and the Boston Marathon Bombing. All the series can be watched good old-fashioned binge-style on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Plenty of clouds in the overnight. Some showers moving in. Southerly winds gusty. Morning lows in the mid-60s. On Tuesday, some showers and storms. Some of the rain locally heavy. Southerly breeze going to the northwest. Will be gusty, highs in the mid-70s. It's 75 at our studios.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
Some people just know they could save hundreds on car insurance by checking Allstate first. Like, you know to check you have your phone first before the cab pulls away.
Hey, thanks, man. No, wait, my phone, come back! It's got my boarding pass, credit cards, phone numbers, my life, come back!
Checking first is smart. So check Allstate first for a quote that could save you hundreds. You're in good hands with Allstate.
Savings vary, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Madison film critic Rob Thomas. Civic Media's David Grant reports on the circus parade in Baraboo, and paranormal investigator Todd Michaels joins the show to freak us out.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Metnair on Air. Jane Metnair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We're talking Econ 101. Joining us, because we are not economics experts. That's why we talk to the experts. Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. Good morning, Rick. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We wanted to talk about the downgrade, the U.S. downgraded by Moody's. All three major credit rating firms are no longer giving the United States their best rating. For those of us who have never taken economics and are just kind of peripherally aware of economics, what does this mean and why should we care?
We should all care. So probably the easiest thing to relate to is when you go to apply for a credit card or a loan, say to buy a car, the lender is going to run your credit report, and they run it through one of three credit rating agencies, and they collect data on you and they determine how likely it is you are to pay your bills on time. And based on that score, helps determine what your credit, what your interest rate is likely to be and how likely lenders are to be able to lend money to you. In a very simplistic way, this is kind of a very parallel situation. Nations, when they go to lend money or go to borrow money, get rated. And the three dominant ones that we care about in the United States are Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and Moody's. Standard & Poor's downgraded us in, about 2011. Fitch was just a couple of years ago, about 2023, and Moody's was the last one right to come to the show. And basically what it means is that the United States credit, in other words, when the United States sells bonds to be able to borrow money from anybody that's willing to lend it to us, we're slightly less perfect in terms of our ability to manage our debt and pay our bills.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, essentially, if I am hearing you correctly, Professor, that they are looking at the United States and how likely we are to be good for our debts, right?
Right. And actually, Moody's, in its commentary, offered a few comments. One of them is that the big knock on the rating resulted from our inability to manage our debt overall and come to agreement. And this has been something that's plagued both Republican and Democratic administrations and Congresses. So this isn't something that suddenly happened.
Right.
However, it did just suddenly happen.
Because of this latest downgrade by Moody's.
Right.
Right.
Rick, I have a question for you, because I remember when that push notification that came through my phone saying that Standard and Poor's had downgraded America's credit rating, and it sent shockwaves through the news. I mean, it was like, oh, okay, our economy is very bad, and we were like downgraded, I think, one level, and it wasn't the end of the world, but it was still a huge thing and it's hard to come back from. Did Standard and Poor's ever upgrade us? Did we get back to the perfect across the three, or have we been sitting at that credit rating with them since 2010, 2011?
I believe we're sitting with the same credit rating since 2010, 2011.
Yeah. So the question I would have, because I'm an individual who has for the past, oh, good Lord, time's a construct, say 15 years, I've been working on getting my credit better and better and better, because for me as a person, it helps.
Yes.
How does that work for a country, though? What's the process? What's the process for, like, if America said, hey, we want to really get back on track and spend right and get that credit rating? Because if it hasn't changed since then, it does it really matter then? Because as an individual basis, I feel like credit ratings are kind of a scam. I think it's a game. But how does the country on the whole
improve our credit score?
Yeah. Right.
Well, the big knock has been on our ability to manage our debt and our budgets. Moody's made commentary that it felt fairly confident that we were able to manage the value of the currency, which is really important, right? And that falls on the shoulders primarily of the Federal Reserve. They've done a great job of making sure that the value of the dollar has been relatively stable. But the thing that really has hurt us is the fact that we continue to run deficits and we don't seem to be able to get that under control. And as importantly, we don't seem to be able to set a clear path over time. So if you think about the current issues that are hitting us, the tariffs, all the issues around the tariffs have created a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace. And the issues around the the administration is calling the Big Beautiful Bill that has now been approved by the House of Representatives. You know, that wasn't the thing that comes to my mind is that remember the film from this is a long time ago, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Sure.
And John Candy and Steve Martin are driving down the highway. They're trying to make time, and a driver is riding parallel to him and honking their horn and saying, "You're going the wrong way." And Candy and Steve Martin go, "Ha ha ha! How do they know where we're headed?" right? Sure, buddy. Ha ha ha! You know. This is kind of the same thing in my. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind was that Moody's is basically saying, "Folks, you got to get your act together." Congress and the administration are saying, "Okay, yeah, this is what we're going to do for our budget. We're going to have these tax cuts that we're going to reinforce. We're going to cut some spending in specific areas like Medicaid and SNAP." But at the end of the day, the Congressional Budget Office has basically said that bill is going to create another $3.8 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. That's the kind of thing that Moody's is pointing to and saying, you know what, you've got enough debt. You've checked that box. It's time to reel it in a little bit.
Yeah,
you need to start making some progress in that direction.
Oh my gosh, that is. I don't want to say that's it, but that's a really, for me, my brain, that's a really good comparison. And now as a way of thinking and talking about it, that's a really scary way of putting it, that they're basically saying, hey, here's how you do it. And we're like, cool, we're going to do it a different way. See you in a couple of years.
Well, and I guess, again, I go back to the IRS under President Biden, because they had hired so many more IRS agents who were going after the bigger tax cheats, which brought in over $1 billion when they were doing that. And now they've X'd that out. So we don't have that revenue coming in either. So it's kind of a rolling ball that doesn't seem to be stopping anywhere, does it?
Exactly. No, it doesn't. And it seems like it may be headed in the wrong, direction.
Right.
you know, one of the great challenges, though, is that we talked a little while ago about the U.S. bonds.
Yes.
And the fact that the yield just went up on the U.S. bonds because they became less attractive. And that preceded Moody's downgrade. And there have been a number of factors, not the least of which is the fact that part of it had to do with China selling off a lot of their holdings of the U.S. Treasury bonds after they were threatened with a very steep tariff level.
Right.
And, you know, you can interpret it however you want. The easy interpretation is that China was saying, okay, if you're going to charge us with tariffs, take this. And they sold off a bunch of U.S. Treasury bonds. And what that really did was it effectively depressed the price of the bond, which raised the yield rate. Bottom line is it makes it more expensive for the U.S. government to borrow money moving forward. Right.
On that topic, Rick, so, you know, China sold bonds. Who do they sell them to? Do they sell them back to the United States? Do they sell them to other countries? Do they sell them? Can they sell them to individuals? Or because if they're selling them off, I'm just wondering who gets them in the long run then.
Yeah. An easy way to think about bonds is kind of like cars.
Yeah.
You've got the brand new car coming off the assembly line, and then you've got the used car market, right? And so when the U.S. issues a bond, it's minting a brand new car, a brand new bond, and they sell it to the market, and it matures in, you know, 1, 2, 10, 30 years.
Right.
In that period of time, that bond can be sold on the open market to anybody that is willing to buy it. In a similar, so it's kind of like the used car market in that analogy. But much like the used car market, it doesn't exist in isolation. So if used car, the used car market is starting to show signs of price instability, that impacts the new bond market as well. So when already issued bonds are generating a lower price translating to a higher yield to the buyer, that means that the U.S. government, when it issues new bonds, has to compete against that, and they have to kind of respond in kind.
If you're just joining us, economics instructor Rick Reed is our guest. He's with Fox Valley Technical College, just talking about Econ 101, trying to break things down for those of us who are not economists. And we had talked about bonds the last time that you were on, because from what I understand, Rick, bonds were like the most solid of bets. Bonds were always a pretty solid bet, right? You are buying from the U.S. government. You are helping to fund the U.S. government by buying bonds. Is that accurate?
Correct. You're supplying the lendable funds to the government.
I'm loaning them money.
Right.
I'm loaning them money. But then when the interest went up, that was bad for the government, but good for me as the holder of the bond?
Exactly. Because the reality of part of what you're buying with a U.S. government bond is a very secure instrument. So far, knock on wood, the government's never failed to pay its debt
right to
any of the bondholders, right? So from that perspective, you're basically getting a kind of a sure thing. When bond prices go down and the yield rate goes up, it's good for you as an investor. It's horrible for the government because now they're
paying out more,
paying a higher interest on anything they need to borrow money for.
I guess the question, and I've asked this question to a lot of situations where we are investing in the government, whether it's our Social Security, our unemployment insurance. What happens if the government can't pay? Is it just it's too bad, so sad? Or is it, I mean, do I have action to get my money because I bought in good faith from you and now you're saying you can't pay me? Is it a you risk it with the bond even though it's so surefire, or is it something where I can come back? And honestly, we have to go to break, so if you want to answer this on the other side of the break, because it's going to take a little bit longer. But
Rick Reed is here, an economics instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We are going to continue with Econ 101 on the other side. Stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
During your working years, you know where your income is coming from. But once you retire, you'll have to know how much you can expect from different income sources and how to manage this income to help support a retirement that could last 2 or 3 decades. Your IRA and 401k will be key income sources. How much should you withdraw from these accounts each year? You'll want to pick a withdrawal rate based on various factors such as your age, health, and other sources of income. Next, consider Social Security. You can start collecting benefits at age 62, but your payments will be much bigger if you wait until your full retirement age between 66 and 67. By learning how to maximize your income sources, you can help yourself achieve a comfortable and more rewarding retirement.
This content was provided by Edward Jones for use by Clay Kanoki, your Wisconsin Rapids Edward Jones financial advisor at 715-421-0958.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you, too, can live and serve part-time, close to home, by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Hi everyone, Seth here from Seth Faces the Music. You know, being the host of the award-winning second greatest radio show in the state of Wisconsin can be a lot of work. I have to come up with new themes all the time. So in the interest of clarity, here are some topics I will not be using in upcoming episodes.
Mittens, tinfoil, gastric bypass surgery, window treatments, 17th century Japanese art, outhouses, bowler hats, spam, clog dancing.
Seth Faces the Music, every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. only on WFHR.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Dr. Slide on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. And just a reminder, make sure you have the Civic Media app. Mm-hmm. Our statewide Scotty Summer Text to Win contest gets underway today. You have a bunch of chances to win. Listen in the 7, 11, 2, and 4 o'clock hours for that hour's keyword. Yep. You want to text in that word via the Civic Media app and be in the running for some fantastic prizes that could but probably won't change the course of your entire life. Download the Civic Media app and be ready. In the 11 o'clock hour, Tom Hartman will have the word for you to text in. Good luck.
We were talking to Rick Reed, who is an economic instructor at Fox Valley Technical College. And before we went to the break, I posed a question that I will sum up very quickly. If I, the investor, invest in U.S. bonds and the government can't pay yields on those, what is our recourse as individuals or anybody?
Yeah, basically sell the bond is what you would do, because the likelihood of them saying we're not going to pay, period. I don't think it'll be like a light switch where one day we can pay, the government can pay, and the next day it can't, with no news about that in advance. More likely what would happen is that if the government was unable to pay, and really what we're talking about is not that it can't pay, but that it can't pay on time.
Right.
the reality of it is that would push the value of the bonds down pretty considerably, push the yields up pretty considerably. And I think what you'd see is a bunch of investors that are holding bonds trying to sell them very quickly. The likelihood of us going from where we are today to that scenario, it would take, hopefully it would take years, maybe decades. I don't think you're going to see it happen overnight. What's more likely, though, is that we continue down the path of having an eroding credit rating as a nation. And if that continues to happen, and if the government, well, one of the things that happened, I think it was back in 2012, 2013, where the government basically was shut down. There was a group of congressmen that basically said, if we can't balance the budget, we're just not going to pass the bill.
Right.
We're not going to pass a bill that doesn't balance the budget. Noble cause, a really bad way to do it. And the reason it's a bad way to do it is that it basically raised the question of the stability of the government and the ability to pay its bills on time. And that's going to have an impact on attractiveness of bonds to buyers.
Cassandra on the live stream is essentially asking the same thing. If this House bill does not pass in the Senate, what happens then? Do we default on our debt, or is it just more likely that they're going to have to do another continuing resolution?
Right, they're going to have to continue. We're going to patch this thing up as long as we can. Now, historically, what we've had if you look over the last 10 years, we've had really low interest rates, right? Really low interest rates. And so that's enabled the government to be able to borrow money and not worry quite as much about balancing the budget urgently, right? Because the interest rate, you know, if you're paying, 2%, it's a lot better than if you're paying 3%, 4%, 5%.
Sure.
That time is going to start to run out, and we're going to start to see the interest payments start to rise pretty quickly if we're not careful.
Well, and weren't our interest rates held, not unnecessarily, but they were held low for a long time purposefully.
Right. Yeah, right. The Federal Reserve in response to the Great Recession of 2008, 2009, one of the things that it did was loaded its balance sheet. Basically, they made as much money, lendable money, available as possible.
Right.
Because one of the things that you don't want to have happen at the end of a recession, during a recession, or at the end of the recession, is having qualified borrowers not being able to access funds quickly and relatively inexpensively. You want them to be able to borrow the money to be able to invest to stimulate the economy.
Right.
The Federal Reserve kind of went overboard on that a little bit.
Well, because they kept them
for quite a while.
They kept them really low for a long time.
You bet.
Yeah.
This is why we have experts on, folks, because Jane and I, we are not experts. We're not lawyers, doctors, or economists. We are all those things adjacent.
Yes. That's why Rick Reed is here, an economic instructor from Fox Valley Technical College. We've got time for maybe one more question, Rick.
Yeah, Lori from Hayward asked the question, do you think that we should raise, do you think the Social Security cost of living adjustment should be raised this year?
Well, historically, it's raised based on the cost of living. They raise it based on the CPI from the prior year, and it's voted on by Congress to be able to enable it. So If you're receiving Social Security, you want it raised as much as possible. If you're not receiving Social Security, you're kind of, you don't really care much until you start, getting close to it. So should it or shouldn't it be? The standard practice has been that it's raised in accordance with the CPI.
There was an increase last year, I believe. Okay. I believe there was an increase in the cost of living last year. He is an economics instructor with the Fox Valley Technical College. We do Econ 101 with Rick Reed to try and break things down. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate your time.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Stay with us. News is coming up next. And then when we return, we go beyond the cheese with the McLaughlin and Hayes Hat Company. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Federal hate crime and multiple state charges have been filed against the suspect in yesterday's fiery attack on a group in Boulder, Colorado, showing support for Israeli hostages in Gaza. Authorities say suspect Mohammed Soleiman is an Egyptian man who came to the U.S. legally, but his visa's expired. CBS's Anna Schechter.
They describe a year-long planning, searching on the internet. He looked to find what he called Zionist groups. And he found this one in Boulder and learned from their own Facebook posts that they would meet weekly at 1 p.m. He knew the time. He was there just 5 or 10 minutes before with all of the materials that he had purchased and prepared for this attack.
The wheels of change are beginning to turn at embattled Newark Liberty Airport in New Jersey. Construction of one of its runways has been completed 13 days.